This is a journey into sound.
Welcome to a Rockin' Pod Expo episode of Cobras and Fire with special guest Chris Sinzak of Decibel Geek. Today we're covering Anthrax, the Bush administration, Sound of White Noise, Stomp 442, and the Lost Albums, Volume 8, The Threat is Real, and We've Come for You All. Plus dick jokes and potato chips. Welcome to Cobras and Fire. I'm your host, Lewis Cannon, and I am joined, as not always, with my side action, Chris Sinzak. How are you, sir?
I'm the Lewis Cannon side piece.
Yeah, man. Pretty excited. I haven't been with another man for a while.
Yeah, we've gotten closer over these last few years, huh?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I mean, you get a little action from Baco, and he's, I understand that Aaron Camaro is slumming with him on another episode.
Yeah, there's like weird love triangles going on between the mothership and the Cobras and the Fire.
Yeah, so I have to say that the last time actually you and I recorded, I know you've done with Baco, but I think it's been 4 years.
Wow, has it been that long?
I think so. I think the last time you were on, it was either Alice Cooper, but that still was 3.5 years ago.
Wow. Well, although if we're not counting the 5-minute interview we did at the end of the first expo.
Oh no, I'm not counting that. I'm counting that okay. Like an official capacity. It was that, and it was the Three Sides of a Shilling episode, if you recall.
Oh yeah, I remember that.
Right in the beginning. So, what do you think? It's been 4+ years. You've inspired such a you're building quite a legacy.
A legacy of dick jokes from you guys, right?
That's right.
No, I've enjoyed watching your show grow. I follow your show. You're one of the go-to ones that whenever it comes out, I automatically listen to it. And yeah, I'm really proud of how you guys have done, and you've definitely been killing it with interviews lately. So the Karabi interview was great.
Oh, thank you, thank you. Yes, I enjoyed when his dog shut the
dishwasher.
Yeah, that was my highlight.
Yeah, it's weird. You know, Karabi does so many interviews, but I never tire of ever listening to him talk. I could listen to him talk all day.
He just goes. He's one of these guys that you learn pretty quick. It's best to say your quick question and then just step aside, and he'll give you a lot. You know what I mean?
I also learned don't go drink for drink with him when you're doing an interview. That was a bad idea when we did the Motley Crue albums Unleashed. Oh, I staggered literally out of the bar that night.
Before we go into the subject at hand, would you like to transition into something coming up this August?
Yeah, the Rockin' Pod Expo Part 3 is happening August 10th. The expo will be August 10th. We're doing a really cool pre-party concert the 9th at the same venue. Everything's happening in one place. It's happening at the Nashville Airport Marriott this year. Bigger venue, I think cooler guests this year, and Cobras and Fire's coming back. That's like the big highlight, right?
Sure. That's going to sell the tickets.
Yeah. But yeah, it's exciting, stressful, crazy, like it always is. But yeah, just you want me to go over some of the guests?
Yeah, break down those dates again.
Okay, Friday, August 9th is the pre-party the night before. It's at the Nashville Airport Marriott. Cumberland Ballroom, and that'll be with the Rock and Roll Residency, which features members of Ace and Gene's band.
Yes.
Also, a band out of the Cookeville, Tennessee area called 8Ball, and also Lipstick Generation, who you may know because they have a podcast called The Lipstick Panel. So we actually have a band performing that are also podcasters at the pre-party. So that's kind of cool.
Yeah, and I've heard their show quite a few. And I heard when who's the main guy in there?
Greg Troyan.
There you go, Greg. I've heard when Greg was on there. That was a pretty funny episode, whatever that, like, sneak peek of the Torpedo Dudes episode.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, that was a crazy day. But, yeah, he did that with us. He also did a full Thin Lizzy history episode with us. He's a great guy, and his band's really cool, too. So that'll be a good show to start off the weekend. If you are a music podcaster and you want to be part of the thing, if you register as a Platinum Podcaster, you get to be part of the first thing that's actually happening Friday afternoon before the pre-party is we're going to have a podcast mixer where we'll have drinks served and, you know, podcasters can meet up and network and kind of just kick off the weekend and make plans and do stuff like that. Saturday will be the expo. It's going to start at 11 a.m., go through about 6 p.m. And some of the guests we have, kind of the headliner is Michael Sweet from Striper, who I know you guys are familiar with.
Oh, yes. And
I'm trying to get him to do a pirate impression while he's there, but he hasn't committed yet.
Hello, mateys. This here is Michael Sweet. I'm here to announce that Sweet and Lynch will have a new album out in 2020 called Squish. The best of Sweet and Lynch. It will have 10 tracks off our first album and none off the second.
Also, Jason Beeler from Saigon Kick, Brian Forsyth from Kicks, Erie Vaughn from Danzig is coming back. Baco did a great interview with him and also did a great job moderating his panel last year. Also, Jack Gibson from Exodus is coming this year. Rick Rule from Every Mother's Nightmare is coming back, and he was a character the first year, so I'm excited to have him back.
Jeremy now, is Michael Butler from Exodus coming too?
I don't think so. I can only book one Exodus basis per year. Also, Jeremy Barber from Green Jello, Drew Fortier from Zen from Mars, Drew and Jim from Wildside.
Oh, boy. Okay, we get it. You can stop now.
And Toby Wright, the producer, is coming back this year. I'm excited to have him back, and he's excited to come back.
We got the dates. We got the place. Rocket Pod Expo. We're good.
A guy named Steve Barnett from a band called Pump 5 that's on High Vol Music. High Vol Music will also be having a booth there. So Bill Chavis from that record company is going to be in town. I'm excited to have him. Got exhibitors and vinyl vendors lined up.
Let's wrap this up.
Of course, dozens of music podcasts coming into town. We're going to have some live podcast sessions. We're going to have the Podcaster Jam, and it will not get cut after four songs this year, I promise.
Do you pinky swear? Otherwise, it's not legal.
Also, a lot of the guests are doing signing sessions, meet and greet. Most of the guests tend to do free autographs, so hopefully that'll stay true this year.
Carpers and Firewall, come by to the booth. Jerk Socks, Face Fans, Journey Wipes.
We're going to have a rock and metal music museum, which is going to basically be like stage
Jesus
played
Christ.
And worn
am
gear.
Am I on mute?
We're going to have – this is another new thing we're doing this year. We're having rock-themed cosplay. So There will be several attractive females dressed as some of your favorite rock stars walking around.
Nice. Females this year. I like it.
I know. It's costing me a lot, but no, I'm just kidding. Raffles and prizes. We'll have some really cool stuff to raffle off. And
That's it. I'm playing you off like the Academy Awards. You're out of time. You're not picking up on social cues.
And just, you know, a lot of community. That's kind of the biggest thing about it is, you know, so many friendships have been formed through this thing for 2 years, and I'm sure it'll happen again this year. And as I was going to mention, if you're a music podcaster or you want to be a music podcaster and you register to be a podcaster at the event, there's different levels of registration, and we're going to have an education track, which will have speaking sessions on, you know, ways to build your audience, ways to do video podcasts, ways to transition to it, ways to do live remote recording.
Because somebody know, get the hook.
Podcasters like to go on location and do interviews with bands before and after shows, and there's always that irritating noise where I'll have somebody there that will tell you how to get the most out of
equipment. Give up.
And also all that stuff. And then we're going to have live podcast sessions all day that'll be professionally recorded and divvied out to the shows afterwards. So, and I'm still working on guests. We never stop until almost the week of the show announcing guests, and that won't be any different this year.
Can you hear me?
Yeah.
Well, I've been trying to get your attention for a while. I've been busting your balls during your whole spiel, but I was on mute. Now, if I could ask for just a little more on the what I thought was really cool is the pre-party is describe the for and if anybody's like on the, you know, considering going, describe who the Rock and Roll Residency is, besides the fact that, yes, they are Ace and Gene's backing band, but what kind of show they usually put together and things like that.
Oh, sure. It's really cool. And like I'm spoiled because I live here in Nashville and get to see right. these guys all the time. But if you've never seen them live, I mean, they're worth the trip alone because, well, A, they're amazing musicians. They play in Ace and Gene's band for the right reasons. They all three grew up just obsessed with Kiss, and they know every song forwards and backwards. But the residency show is basically a 70s rock cover show, but with a lot of twists. Like you're going to hear the songs played as faithfully as possible by amazing musicians, but they also have tons of guest stars that just get up on stage. And if you don't know, I mean, damn near everybody lives here now. And, right. and those guys know all those people. I've seen some jaw-dropping performances of guests with them. Alice Cooper freaking got up there with them one night. That was insane. Yeah. That was my first Alice Cooper show. The first time I saw Alice Cooper was in a small club with the residency. And
that's awesome. How many did you do? Three songs? Two songs?
He did like four or five.
Wow. That's
It was like 20, 30 minutes. It was really cool. And but he's that Robin Zander from Cheap Trick has gotten up there with him. Derek St. Holmes is a regular guy who jumps up on stage with him. And if you haven't heard these guys play Stranglehold with Derek St. Holmes singing, I mean, it's amazing. So you get all the good Nugent material without the political commentary.
That's perfect. Yeah. Like it. You get the solo without the yeah, exactly.
I mean, I don't like Nugent's music. I just like his politics.
Then Anthrax, what was your gateway drug?
Anthrax I got into first. My first exposure to Anthrax was I'm the Man, I believe.
As was I.
Yeah, I was listening to a lot of hair metal at the time, and that was all I was really into. But my brother had a friend that would drive us around, go to the mall like everybody else did in those days, and he would play the cassette of I'm the Man over and over and over. And I do remember it being cool because it was just so different from everything else. And although I didn't know until like decades later that the chord progression is, well, I don't even know what the name of it is, but it's like this old traditional Jewish thing, you know, da 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 da.
That is pretty funny.
I had no idea until Scott Ian mentioned it in an interview. I'm like, oh God, that is what that is. Yeah. But it's you know, it's pretty much a dumb song, but it was revolutionary for its time. But my best friend growing up, as I was getting into Kiss majorly, he was getting into Anthrax majorly, and he loved the Belladonna era stuff. Like, you know, like he definitely had Persistence of Time, State of Euphoria. He loved all that stuff. So it did rub off on me, and I eventually got into it more. It was just weird, though, to go from hearing I'm the Man being the only thing I really heard from them and then getting into the older stuff going, wow, this is way different from that. But yeah, it was that's how I got into them. How about you?
Pretty similar. Yeah, I'm the Man was the first thing I ever heard by them. And then also, I had no idea. Well, first off, did you know it was Sam Kinison?
On the oh
and then on that EP too, I was like, man, the song I really like on this EP is a song called Sabbath Bloody Sabbath.
Yeah, I remember. I did love that too. Yeah, it was like one of the first Sabbath songs I ever heard was through them.
I never heard that there, you know, that was the first time I heard that song is my point.
Yeah, me too.
Yeah. Okay, cool. So I was like, you know, they just seem so different. I mean, here they were this metal band that, you know, the guitarist wore a Public Enemy t-shirt, but then it was kind of jarring to go from that to then I bought State of Euphoria and I liked it. I didn't love it, but then I think I got Among the Living then and then went to State of Euphoria. And then kind of went from there. But it was just so, you know, at that time, between that and then throwing out that Killer Bees album, they were just a very different metal band, right?
Oh, sure. Yeah, they're very unique. They definitely had their own sound to them. Nobody sounded like Anthrax at the time. And then they fire Joey or he left, depending on who you believe. And then John Bush enters and then they drastically change their sound again.
Right. And also I forgot to mention too on the Killer Bees would kind of help seal it too is the whole covering Parasite. I was like, okay. And they also are crazy about Kiss. You know what I mean? It was like this extra feather cap or whatever, you know?
Their Kiss covers are some of my favorites.
Are you equal on them? Do you like the Bush era better? Belladonna, potato patata?
I guess I go back and forth. So I guess I'd have to say I like them equally because, I mean, there's been times where I'll listen to nothing but the Bush era, but there's also times I'll go back to they kind of made me a believer again with the kind of pun intended with worship music. I thought Belladonna was fantastic on that.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. But okay. I don't know. How about you? Do you have one that you like better than the other?
I like a lot of both. I can tell you this much. Like, have you seen them live before?
Yes. I saw them with John Bush. I haven't seen them with Joey.
So I've seen them twice with Bush and three times with Joey. And those last three times were just in the last couple of years. And while I really liked definitely the most recent show that I saw with them, there's something missing. The fact that, you know, those four albums that we're going to talk about today are nowhere. They don't play anything off them live. And when I saw them with Bush, both times, still were better because they played everything. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
So I would have to say I just like them equally.
I saw them with John Bush in Lawrence, Kansas at a place called the Granada. And I was like, God, that must've been 2001 or two, I think. I can't remember what year. It was when I was living in Kansas City and I made like an hour and a half drive to see them. And there wasn't that many of us there. That was the saddest part.
Sure.
Yeah.
And it was great, right?
Oh, they were amazing. Played a great set list. Like you said, they played, you know, they covered pretty much all eras. So I had a ball and it was great to see them. I still want to see them with Joey. They just, the time they've come here with Joey, I haven't been able to go.
Yeah. Like, similar story on that was that I saw them in a little club in 2003 supporting We've Come For You All. And that, the concert I saw is the one that is filmed for that weapons or music of mass destruction DVD. Have you seen that?
Yeah. Yeah. It's a great DVD.
It's basically the date before where they filmed that at. It's exactly the same set and, you know, 2 hours of just amazing rock. So,
you know, I guess, you know, it just depends on what day it is, but I mean, I'm happy that I can be a fan that appreciates both eras of the band. Cause I know there's a lot of Joey hardliners that they don't look like any of the Bush stuff. And it was like, it seemed like a lot of fans just ditched him when Joey left the band. And I'm sorry, but as we'll go through these things, they missed out on some great tunes.
So let's crack into Sound of White Noise. Now, this album, you know, came out 2 years after the Black Album. It was kind of a mystery back in the day. I don't know if it was for you. Tell me what that was. I was never completely clear why that Joey all of a sudden left, because all of a sudden they've got this notoriety. They were all on MTV with that whole when it did Bring the Noise, right, with Public Enemy.
Yep.
And then all of a sudden, poof, it was like the biggest they've ever been, and then gone.
I really don't remember. I mean, I remember all, there was a lot of rumors about it, like that he was unhappy in the band, or that the band were making decisions without him. And I don't know, or maybe they just wanted to modernize their sound, and they were like, you know, the high pitched vocalists are kind of not in vogue anymore, so we got to get something that's got more of a gruff type, you know, vocal. So I don't know. I don't know the actual story, because it varies on who you listen to.
Sure. Well, that's what I think it was. I mean, I think that's a real story. It was kind of a weird thing. That was that it was either, it was kind of polarizing, I think, Joey's vocals. You either loved him or you would listen to Anthrax because of him. Wouldn't you say that's an accurate statement?
Yeah, well, I mean, and for a metal band, Joey, I mean, let's face it, Joey really didn't fit. I mean, he came from like a Steve Perry type of school. He was into Boston and Journey and all that stuff when they auditioned him. And it's kind of odd that he wound up in the band in the first place, but although I guess anything's better than Neil Turbin. I know that's going to piss off some of the old school fans.
That'd piss off me. I still have not heard that album. All it took for me was the for a band that has a bunch of great album covers, Fistful of Metal is not a good album cover.
Would Why? Because it looks like a fifth grader drew it.
Just a guy. Hey guys, for our first album, I think Eddie Trunk had something to do with that album cover. What do you think?
Well, he had something to do with everything, didn't he?
Well, he did. He did. He signed him. He made him famous, and he said, "Hey guys, let's have a fist going through this guy's mouth, and that'll get you on the shelves at Walmart, right?"
I didn't tell you that the fist hitting the guy's face is actually from The Incredible Hulk, and then he jerked off right afterward.
I knew you were waiting for an Incredible Hulk, an entry point, somewhere to put that in here.
I always love a good callback.
Oh, God, the Hulk. I still am going with the fact that he would have actually ripped his dick off now thinking about it more.
Yeah, I don't know, though. He has Hulk dick.
I know he does, but still, I mean, just the force. It doesn't matter what you're built of. If you have enough force, I think you can just, you know, if he's hulking out, it's gone. What do you think?
Yeah, I mean, if you can Hulk slam a guy through the earth, then your dick stands no chance, really.
I think that's good. That's, again, like I said, it's science.
Yeah, science. Hulk!
Smash! Like you were saying, we end up with kind of a mystery to this new singer. I don't even know if I knew that they had a new singer until all of a sudden that I heard only on the radio for the first time.
No, I knew about it because I remember Headbangers Ball was making a big deal out of it for a while, like during the time they were recording this record, because they were and they kept typing up like, "They've got Armored Saint singer." And I was just like, "Who's Armored Saint?"
Yeah, right.
I didn't come to appreciate Armored Saint till just a few years ago, but now I freaking love them. But but back then I had no idea, and I was all into my hair metal. I was like, you know, who cares about Armored Saint? I've got White Lion. I'll admit it. But my best friend, though, who was a major Anthrax fan, he was very skeptical, and he was just like, they're not going to be the same without Joey, and this isn't going to be very good. But boy, were all fears allayed when the video for Only premiered on MTV, and I was at his house, and I remember we couldn't wait to see it, because it's like, what are these guys going to sound like? We, you know, no internet, you had no idea what it was going to be,
right?
And we were both completely blown away by it. I mean, just is one of the best, and I'm going to say it's more of a hard rock song than a metal song. It's not really a metal song, but he's a diehard metal fan. But even he was just like, this is fucking good, and we couldn't wait to go out and buy the record after we saw the video.
No, I mean, like, that's been quoted many times, but James Hetfield has said, you know, that's a perfect song, right?
Yeah.
Perfectly written song. It's got everything you need, all the right elements. And, you know, immediately I was, you know, drawn to his voice and everything, as that, you know, this is a game changer. And another thing about it too was just that even though you're hearing it on the radio, I was like, this is easily the best sounding Anthrax song I've ever heard. Right.
I think, well, I'll go as far as to say I still think it might be the best song the band's ever done.
think that's, I think it's a sin the fact that they don't even pull, they, for a few years, the first two times I saw them with Joey, they played it and then they dropped it.
I don't get it. I really don't get it.
I get the fact that it's, it, Joey doesn't have the same voice for it, but come on, just sing a little lower. How is that not that the crowd not going to just, every time I went, the crowd went nuts. But then they have that whole, just like the whole thing that drives me nuts about the whole eras of different bands like Kiss and everything. Just let's not play this section of our history. So, but it may be their best song of all eras.
Yeah, I think it is. I'll never forget watching that video for the first time and just my jaw dropped. I couldn't believe how good it was. And although, things get spotty after this record, but we'll go into that as we go. Sure.
Sound of White Noise is one of my top albums of the 90s, period. Doesn't matter. Like, just from a production standpoint to, I could just put it on from Potter's Field all the way to what, This Is Not an Exit, right?
Yeah, well, and even Black Lodge, which is a big departure for them, is a great song.
It's incredible. Even they have like a remix version of it too that's actually good as well. I mean, just the point is, like, looking through this, I'm like picking a song, it's just an album. You know what I mean? Like, it just flows. Like, if you actually take it's one of those things, like, if you like any great album, you take certain chunks away, I can't really pick and choose off of it. And the production from Dave Jordan, his work with, I mean, I was looking at his discography. I mean, there was a while when, even if it was a band that I wasn't that big of a fan of, I would at least check them out because he was the producer behind it. I mean, he, not an Offspring fan that much, but the ones that he actually did with them are easily their best. You've got, he did Alice in Chains, and just, when this came out, I just put on the headphones. I was just amazed. I think this is one of the Big Four's greatest produced albums.
I'd agree with that. Yeah, I mean, looking at the track Room for One More, that's another great one. The whole thing's good. And then you had the bonus tracks with, of course, I have a soft spot for the Cowboy song cover by Thin Lizzy. Yep. They do a great job on that one, too. And off Wiedersehen by Cheap Trick, that's great. They were really at a good creative peak at this point. And, I'm a Dan Spitz fan. I've always loved his playing in the band. And, this was his last album with the band, which I thought was a shame because I wish he had stayed on board because I love the solos that guy would churn out. And if they could have kept this lineup together, I think it would have been a stronger decade for them.
No, I mean, Anthrax perfectly rated because they can't keep their shit together. Between labels, between band members, there's just something going on at the core of that band that that turns things against them. I mean, they had, and with that said, second single should have been Black Lodge.
Mm-hmm. What was the second? I thought
Room,
it was.
Room for One More.
Oh, right. Okay. Well, yeah. I mean, they were probably a little nervous to put that one out second because it was so different than everything else. Strangely, Black Lodge actually got a lot of airplay here in Nashville when it was out. I do remember that. It was on all the time because I was in a band at the time. I was in high school playing in a band, and we'd always do Friday and Saturday night rehearsals, and I'd be driving home at 2 o'clock in the morning, and that for some reason that song would always come on super late at night.
Black Lodge, will you live?
probably this. You'd have to say this is the most complete album of the Bush era. I'm gonna start calling it the Bush administration.
Ooh, I like that better than Bush Thrax. I think that's what we're gonna call this Anthrax, okay. The Bush administration.
Okay. Kind of funny that 9/11 and the Anthrax scare happened during the Bush administration too.
Ooh, that's true. That's true.
Pretty creepy.
It's odd. Wow, it's getting deep here, Sinzak.
I know.
I realize this is a comedy and rock talk show where we talk about Hulk jacking off, right?
Hulk! Smash!
Right out the gate, they hit their top album of this era. But with that said, there are some great things coming down the road here soon for them. But again, this is their biggest selling album, hitting gold, I believe, and that was it.
Should have done much better than that.
Yeah. It died quick. And then just 2 years later, I remember going at Purdue, going to this little CD store and convenience store called Discount Den. You could get the new releases for $11.99. That's a bargain, Chris.
Yeah.
You got that? That is a discount back in the day. And I was just in there, what's out this week? Didn't know, looking around. And then I saw this naked dude with a big thing of trash, a big ball of trash on there. And I was like, what the hell is this? And really small font in the corner, not their same logo, it says Anthrax. I'm like, huh, I didn't even know Anthrax had a new album out. I think I will go buy this. And I took it home, and that was Stomp 442. And it said the Butcher Brothers, who I know. Actually, did you know the Butcher Brothers produced one of your favorite bands, Criss Cross? Right, Chris?
I don't know how to respond to that.
Did you know that, though? Did you know that?
No, I had no idea. I will say they're aptly titled because they butchered Anthrax's sound on this record.
Oh, my God, dude. I'm glad we're on the same page here. I think that it's perfectly advertised, the fact that there's a big ball of trash on the cover.
Yep. Yeah.
Before we go into this, too, do you know where that album cover is from? I found this today looking on their Wikipedia page.
I don't know because I never look at Wikipedia for any reason.
Bullshit. Give me a break. If Wikipedia went down, Decibel Geek would be offline.
Aww.
For a second. You guys are excellent. I mean, if you could make money reading from Wikipedia on a weekly basis, it would be a great life. Let me see.
That's what Patreon's for.
Oh, is that right? Okay. Anthrax. You should have an extra special. Just Aaron Reed's Wikipedia. You could have that as a sister episode to the Torpedo Dudes. You can bust my balls back, you realize.
I'm going to, don't worry.
Okay, good.
It.
You just waiting. You're like in the shadows, ready to pounce.
My brain's working a little slow today, so I'm having a hard time coming up with comebacks.
Okay, so here it is. So I'll just give you a little more information on the cover art. Now I am reading from Wikipedia right now. In a 1996 interview, Bruce Dickinson revealed that that album cover for Stomp 442 was actually cover art done for his album Balls to Picasso. So that he passed on that one.
Smart move.
Right? So tell me, I mean, when you found this album, did you know it was even coming out? Because there's no promotion.
I did because of my best friend who was a massive Anthrax fan. And I was at this point after Sound of White Noise, I was a huge Anthrax fan, and Metal Edge was hyping it early on saying how it was going to be this amazing follow-up to Sound of White Noise. And, you know, here's the date that it comes out. And me and him went down to the Sam Goody record store back when those still existed and bought it on release day and got in the car, put the cassette in, and we're kind of like, man, this just isn't as good. And I mean, just kind of immediately, the production is just god awful on this thing. It's, I don't know what the hell I don't know if they were trying to sound like a grunge band, if that was the aim, but it just doesn't work. I mean, there are good riffs on this thing. There's a few good songs on it. But it sounds like a very misguided, confused album to me.
No, I just think the songs aren't very good. I remember trying to like it at first, like Random Acts of Senseless Violence, maybe King Size, and Feel. Probably the first three songs are, I don't know. The first few are the best. American Pompeii is okay. I don't know. The second half definitely sucks.
There's one song on the second half I like a lot, but the one that I picked as my pick for this is Fueled. I think it's by far the best song on the record. Not to say that it's amazing or anything, but it's probably the most cohesive tune on the record. The other one I would pick would be Tester. I think that one's okay. But when I'm saying that one's okay and it's one of my picks, that's not a good sign.
No, I know what you're saying. Like, this one did not, I mean, maybe they just heard it and just didn't promote it. I don't know what it is. Cause at this point they were still on Elektra, and then they were gonzo. Like, basically after this hit the streets, they were gone.
Yeah, Elektra didn't do anything to promote this. I don't know. Like I said, if it wasn't for my best friend, you know, salivating over the fact that it was coming out, I wouldn't have known. Because otherwise, I saw, other than Metal Edge and a little bit on Headbangers Ball, I saw really nothing for this record. And they brought in Paul Crook to play lead guitar. I'm not real crazy about his playing on this, but as we go further to the next one, I'll have much better things to say about him. And then this is also the beginning of the trend of having Dimebag play on their records. Mm-hmm. He plays on, I think it's King Size and Riding Shotgun. His solos are great, but the songs are just not that good, you know?
No, and actually King Size is actually, oh, okay. It's all the music is by Charlie. Every single song is by Charlie on this one. They're not any co-writes, actually. That's interesting. And then they randomly change whoever's on lead, Crook and Dimebag. That was odd. It was like this, like, just revolving door of whoever the fuck was playing lead.
Yeah, and it's as we go further in, even Charlie plays lead on some stuff. So
right.
He's kind of the Svengali of the band, I guess.
Yeah, and back in the day, I didn't know he was playing guitar. You know, did you know then?
No, I just assumed he was just the drummer the whole time.
Yeah, just a dude that plays the drums and likes comic books. That's all I knew.
Yeah, it's a strange record, and I did go back today and listen to it again. Like, let me see if this resonates with me anymore, and it just really didn't. I mean, first, like you said, the first two or three songs, I'm kind of like, okay, it's not as bad as I remember, and then it was just kind of downhill from there. And
right.
Like, the song In a Zone is terrible. Perpetual Motion, I don't like. Drop the Ball isn't any good. And then it ends with this ballad. Well,
at least that one's aptly titled.
That's true. And then it ends with this thing called Bear it's like a total, let's make a grunge ballad is what that is. Nice. And it doesn't work. It's just, it hasn't aged well. I know there's some fans that just love this record, but this is one of those where it's kind of like every, at least once a year, I'll try to listen to Cheap Trick's The Doctor and convince myself that it's good, and it never happens.
some revisionist history too. You know, I do like how Scott Ian, you know, the spokesperson, the talking head for the band, always, you know, he's basically a bit of a politician, because he always, like, at this time, he bashed the success of this in interviews around the time of the fact that John Bush just didn't bring his game. And his vocals do kind of suck on this album, too. The whole thing kind of sucks.
Yeah, it sounds like a half-baked thing.
Right?
Yeah.
Yeah. But I come on, man. I hate to say that
because I love Anthrax, but yeah, I mean, but if something's bad, I'll say it's bad. I don't, the one, was it the latest one, For All Kings? I didn't think it was very good either.
Nope. There is one song that was a rewrite of In the End, whatever that was, that long, whatever their epic was in their most lazy. Like, everything was kind of like a rewrite of whatever worship music was great. That wasn't as good.
Well, worship music actually had full songs. Former All King has, like, okay, we have an idea and a half. There's a song, and it just, they don't make it. The only thing great about For All Kings to me is Jonathan Danais' lead playing. I think he's amazing on it, but the songs are just not there.
No, they're not there. The only thing good about For All Kings is they had at least two intermissions I could take a piss whenever they play live now, when they play those songs. Now, Volume 8, The Threat is Real. So here goes another one where, for years, you know, again, this is the time of, I don't even think Metal Edge, did Metal Edge exist anymore?
Maybe. They did.
Yeah. Like in 1998, I think I still looked at that, or, I mean, Circus was probably gone. What would you read to find out when the new Anthrax album was coming out?
I still had a subscription to Metal Edge at this time, and I remember them promoting this next record. But it's not the Jerry Miller years, so you got no pictures of Joey Allen and Janie Lane's birthday parties. But it was the Paul Gargano years where it was trying to be more modern.
This must have been where I knew about this album then, because I do remember Metal Edge continuously getting thinner and thinner, if I recall. It was more and more ads. A lot of ads, right?
Yeah, and way more black and white pages.
Yeah, that was it because I'm now you got my memory going. So I remember seeing the album cover, which, you know, with Transition, this album cover is badass. You know what I mean? Like, I think it's got everything you need from Anthrax from their whole cartoon. Like, I always like State of Euphoria too.
Mm-hmm.
Are you a fan of this album cover or don't like it?
No, I like this one. I have a huge soft spot for this record. This one got me completely back into the band, even though nobody gave a shit by this point. Like it was on Ignition Records, which I think the company went under right as the album got released, if I remember hearing right.
Is there anything else by Ignition you've ever heard?
They were working with some of the older, like, heritage rock and metal bands. I can't remember any names right off the bat, but they're
like a Spitfire.
Yeah, very similar to Spitfire. Whereas, you know, it was probably operated out of some dude's apartment.
Sure.
But yeah, this came out in 98, and I love this record. I liked it from day one, and my best friend who was the Anthrax fan had Stomp 442 kind of ended it for him. He's just like, I don't care for this. And then I tried to play this one for him, and he's just like, they're just doing rock songs. They're not even a metal band anymore. And I'm kind of like, yeah, but it's cool though. although there is some goofy stuff on this record. I mean, let's mention it first. Hogtide's one of my favorite tunes on it. It is stupid, but
which is the one about us, like Godzilla, like stomping, like going over the Hudson River. You ask me, can I be liver? Like a monster crossing the Hudson River. Stomping. Let me wait. Feet of clay that I'll scorch to the floor. And with that at any one more.
Well, I do want to mention though that did you know that there's before the song Hogtide starts, there's a cameo by Mark Jacchini from Three Sides of the Coin.
Really? He's eating chips?
Yeah, there's a guy eating chips.
That's where he got to start, I heard. Are you sure he didn't do the intro for Born Again Idiot?
Yeah.
You know, Chris, my erasure's well worn because I make a lot of mistakes.
Unfortunately, the royalties in this album didn't help that much.
Yeah, not really. And then there's a song called 604 that's 35 seconds long, and it's just about a fat chick named Katrina.
Oh, I know that one. Yeah, there's that one. There's that silly Cup of Joe. This album, the thing that's kind of cool is this album is sort of a more straightforward version of Attack of the Killer Bees in a way. You know what I mean? Like it has... I mean, it has a little of a – I guess what I'm saying is that they throw a bunch of silly Anthrax of old stuff into some amazing rock songs too, right? The Ignitions.
They're on Ignition Records, so at this point they're like, let's just make whatever the fuck we want
to
make.
Right. Like Toast to the Extras I think is a straightforward Attack of the Killer Bees type song.
Yeah, well, it's kind of a bash thing on their either their road crew or people that are hangers-on. I mean, the lyrics or John Bush is kind of slamming people that follow them around. Swimming on the surface is a hell of a lot safer up here. Ain't prepared to dive on a cover all my darkest fears. This ain't no covert operation. I don't have that much concentration.
Jumping out of my skin. This ain't no covert operation. I'm lost in this father called you.
But there are a lot of good songs. Like the Phil Anselmo does a cameo on Killing Box, which is a pretty cool track. Mm-hmm. Alpha Male is a good song. My favorite song on it, and to this it was when I bought it, and it still is Catharsis. I think this song, and it's definitely just a rock song. It's not a metal song in the least, but it's so well constructed. Bush's lyrics are great. The melodies are great. The riffing is great. I love everything about Catharsis.
No, this is a solid album, and I remember picking it up too, and it took a while for me even to find the damn thing because no regular stores had it. I think I got it like a – I might have had to actually order this. That's when you know you're a big Anthrax fan, when you have to tell the guy – or any music fan, right? Because you get, back in the day, you'd say, hey, man, I need this album. Nobody else wants it, but I do.
Yeah, I ordered it through the mail.
Wow. Okay.
Yeah, I remember I think it was from Metal Edge. I think they had an ad to order it through – I can't remember. Like you send off a check. I think that's how it worked. But 98, though, this was a very hazy time for me because I was doing a number of things I couldn't be doing.
Sure.
I'll just say that the eight ball on the cover was very fitting for the things I was going through.
Nice. Okay. Yeah.
I don't like cocaine. I just love the way it smells.
I don't drink brass monkey. Like the beat funky. Nickname Eazy-E, yo, eight ball junkie. Bass drum kicking and show my shit. Rapping hole in my dick, boy. I don't quit crying, rocking motherfucker from around the way. I got a six shooter, yo, mean I'm brave. Rolling through the hood to find the boys. Kick dust and cuss, crank up some noise. Police on my draws, I have to pause. 40 ounce in my lap and it's freezing my balls. Hook the right turn and let the boys go past. Then I say to myself, they can kiss my ass. Hit to get drunk, got the eight in my lips. Put in the old tape, Marvin Gaye's greatest hits. Turn the shit up, had the bass cold rumpin'. Cruising through the east side, south of Compton. See a big ass, then I say word. I took a look at the face, and the bitch was to the curb. Hold on my tip for the title I'm holding. Easy E's fucked up and got the eight ball rolling.
I was
raised in L.A.
I was
cruising down the street in my six ball.
Yeah, since the moment I heard it, though, the song I thought was really unique. And, you know, kind of new metal that just crunch to it was Inside Out, track 3. And just the lyric, too. I thought I knew what provocation was. I've eaten from the insane root that imprisons reason. I have no idea what that means, but it sounds badass.
Yeah, it's kind of like old Jim Morrison lyrics where it's like, this makes no sense, but it sounds cool.
Right, exactly. And I assume, being a fan, you've seen... somehow they got funding to make actually a pretty cool video for this song.
Yeah, it's been a long time since I've watched it, but I do remember it.
Yeah, I mean, I'm talking about my memory of 20 years ago thinking that it was cool that they redid the Twilight Zone Shatner Nightmare at 30,000 Feet.
Yeah, which is pretty legendary. And I always appreciate that about the Anthrax guys is they always would wear their influences on their sleeve and pull out references and callbacks to things that they grew up on, which I always appreciated.
Yeah.
It holds up. I still go back to this record pretty often. It's funny that it was recorded at Krusty's Funhouse in Yonkers, New York.
Of course, you're not reading that Wikipedia, are you?
I had it committed to memory. I'm telling you.
Back time in the balanced what I am. And I remember everything we said we'd find a way. Laugh and cry, love and hate, ain't no way to make this arm won't break. I put it out there, it comes back. I put it out there, it comes back. I put it out there.
So now 5 years have passed. We have survived Y2K, right?
Yep.
And it's 2003. And Metal Edge, I'm just going to call it. I'm going to say it's gone.
By that point, I think it was.
Because this is one of the first couple albums that I was part of, like, finding out about it online. Like, either from actually, I'd moved from Metal Edge to Metal Sludge at this point.
Yeah, me too.
Okay. So yeah. Now we've moved online. I think that there is, at this point, I don't know even know how advertising was done back in the early 2000s online or anything like that. But I remember being aware that this album was coming out only from that kind of promotion. And yeah. Does that sound familiar to you too?
Well, yeah. And also the Dimebag Darrell thing, I remember getting a lot of play online. Even though it wasn't a new thing for Anthrax to do that, it still got headlines of, you know, Dimebag Darrell to appear on new Anthrax record. I remember that got a lot of traction through some of the sites I followed. But yeah, I remember I bought this on release day too, and I was not disappointed in this one.
No. And the thing that I love too is this may be my favorite album cover by them.
Oh, maybe. It's amazing. Yeah.
You think?
Yeah, I think it's awesome. It's one of the best ones they've had.
And they're pretty solid in this, and it kind of combined, you know, have they used the same artist multiple times?
This was a guy named Alex Ross. I don't know if he did the other ones or not. I know the last few records have been the same artist. I don't know if it's this guy though.
I just love it.
Because I don't look at Wikipedia or anything, so I couldn't tell you.
Uh-huh. And I believe this is the first appearance of the A / pentagram.
Yeah, I think it was.
Which I thought was just badass too.
Yeah, this is probably the most cohesive record they put out since Sound of White Noise.
Easily.
Yeah.
Yeah, Volume 8 was great and fun, and again, it's a solid album. Obviously, we've already said our thoughts about Stomp 442, but the one of the first things that hit me on this too was they were on a basically no label, right? They're on Sanctuary, so basically no label, but the production sounded fucking great again.
Yeah, well, you can thank Rob Caggiano for part of that too.
And that was interesting to find out about him much later on, of why going back to, if you're a Volbeat fan, all of a sudden realizing and the Damn Things and production he's done, you know, after that coming back, you realize why.
Yeah. He's a great guitar player, but he knows production to a T. And
yep.
And you could tell he was a big part of this sound, especially with everything he's done since then. But yeah, I mean, I remember listening to this for the first time and just being taken aback by how big it sounded. Like everything, this is the biggest sounding album they did since Sound of White Noise, easily.
Yeah, one of the biggest sounding they've put out, period. I mean, if you listen, one of the reasons that worship music is so great is because Rob Caggiano produced that too, I think, yep, sonically. These two are very similar in that sound.
Oh yeah, for sure. I mean, it's, and this is one where I keep going back to my friend who I grew up with that was the Anthrax fan. I bought Steve. Steve. Actually his name's Wes. But I bought this on release day and immediately went to his apartment and was like, you gotta hear this, because I gave the whole thing a full spin, and the song that I picked is what I tried to turn him onto with it, and that's Nobody Knows Anything. Because he was my best friend growing up, but he was also the drummer in my band when I was in high school. And Charlie was like his hero at that time. And I was just like, if you don't listen to any other song on this record, I want you to hear this one. And I played that one for him, and he was very impressed with it. He's just like, that's the drumming I've been wanting to hear since, you know, Sound of White Noise. And
yep.
And Charlie puts on a fucking clinic in that song.
All I know I was going to ask you is, so they always kind of, they all start off their albums with a thrash number in the Bush era. So What Doesn't Die, this one, Crush, and, you know, Nothing on Stop 442, we'll just forget about that one, or Potter's Field, of those three, which is your best?
What Doesn't Die.
It's a split. I'm going to go Crush.
Okay. I like Crush too, but I like this one better.
But I understand that you're not a Safe Home fan.
Don't like it. Never have. It's
you don't
okay.
Even like, you don't even like watching Keanu Reeves walk around in the video?
I like it less because of that.
What's that about? That's such weird. I'm like, they're completely off, you know, off any major label, and just randomly Keanu Reeves is a fan and just decides to be in that video.
I don't know what that was about, but it was definitely a terrible choice for a single. It's like, you really think radio is going to pick up an Anthrax song that, you know, that late in the game and, you know, just put out something that causes you to bang your head and be done with it. You don't need to put a ballad. It's not a bad song. It's just not, I'm just not particularly crazy about it.
No, it's no Black Lodge. I hear you.
Right. I don't know. What are your favorites on this one?
Man, I remember that they said that they did a complete Kiss vibe with Cadillac Rock Box, which I didn't catch at first, but then I do hear kind of that classic Kiss-ish riff. That's just a fun song. Taking the music back, the fact that Roger Daltrey actually does that scream on it. Like, again, yeah. How do you have Roger Daltrey on this album at this point in your career? I guess he wasn't doing anything then either. But
I think that song is amazing.
That's a great song, too. You got even funny names like Strap It On and... like you said, that drum clinic with Nobody Knows Anything. The only song I really don't like on this album is Superhero.
Yeah, that one's kind of meh.
And again, this one sold, I think it said that they did really well because it sold 80,000. You know, nowadays you'd be thrilled selling 80,000, period. But I think it sold 80,000 out the gate and then it was done. I think it sold 100,000 total is what it says. And it was out, it was over.
Wow.
It's a shame. I mean, that's what I'm saying. Between this and Volume 8, these are the two missing albums that's a sin if people just don't know, if they're Anthrax fans and they've just dismissed them. Foolish.
Well, that's the saddest thing is, you know, there's a lot of people, probably people that we both know that have never heard these records or even given them a shot. And I don't know. Both records deserve so much more. That's the only thing with Anthrax, which, you know, as we've said, you know, they are professionals at shooting themselves in the foot and taking attention away from them because of some of these decisions they make. But it's just a shame that it's one of those bands that I think deserved a much bigger audience than what they got, but you know, they kind of bring it on themselves with some of these decisions and, you know, we're not even going to touch the Dan Nelson year, I guess.
Right. I mean, that's the whole thing is that they, you know, they were so supportive of John Bush that they re-recorded all their classics, The Greater of Two Evils. And when that didn't do well, they just ditched them and went back with Joey for a reunion tour. Right.
Well, you know, when Dan Nelson, like I heard that maybe Joey left, I can't, it's so hard to keep track because they flip flop singers all the time that there was a period of time where and John Bush said in an interview that they actually did come back to him and said, we want you to be the singer again. And he was just like, too little too late, guys. I'm not doing it.
Well, that was after, I believe, the whole Dan Nelson then trying to get – then they tried to get Bush to do worship music, and then they said, fine, fuck it. Let's just do Joey, and he ended up knocking it out of the park.
Yeah. Thankfully for them. But
yeah,
but they wanted John to come back, and John makes more money doing the voice of the Burger King guy than he did in Anthrax.
Which is an amazing story. And he just likes doing Armored Saint. By the way, I should mention, too – I had not heard Symbol of Salvation, Armored Saint, until about 2 years ago when Wind Hands Down came out, and I started going back in Armored Saint's catalog since I love that album.
Yeah.
And I did not know. Have you noticed what a similar sound, it's also produced by Dave Jordan, that album has to Sound of White Noise?
I've never A-beat them, but I'll do
it. You got to A-B them. I mean, it is. They absolutely heard that album, and because they were not a band that sold records, so I wasn't even really aware of him or John Bush, like you were. You're like, who's Armored Saint?
And right.
That is actually a very close template to what Sound of White Noise is in vibe, the sonics, everything. So A-B it. That's your little homework.
I love both albums, but I haven't really like tried to compare and contrast the production, but I'll definitely do that.
Yeah. They definitely got what they were looking for is all I'm saying. They don't rip off Armored Saint, but there's a lot of similarity to what they were going for. So,
and Armored Saint, yeah, not to change subject too much, but you know, that's another band. If you haven't checked them out enough, you know, do so. I spun something off Delirious Nomad this past week, and man, there's just so much good material from those guys. You know, they're another hidden gem of metal. You know, I still hope that maybe one day they'll do something with Anthrax, will do something with John Bush again, but you know, I don't know. It seems like personality clashes and the egos are probably not going to allow that to happen. And honestly, Joey's their meal ticket. They're going to make more money with Joey as it is.
If you were hearing this, Chris, what is the message we are trying to tell people for this era? You've probably heard Sound of White Noise, but what do they need to do after this episode is over?
First, well, yeah, I mean, I think we both appreciate Volume 8 and with all its quirks, but if you're new to the band and or all you know is Sound of White Noise from the Bush administration, yes. I would probably do We've Come For You All next. That'd be probably a good one to kind of ride into.
Agreed.
Then do Volume 8 and then ignore Stomp 442.
That's right. Those are your instructions.
Yeah. I mean, we played something off Stomp 442 today. That's really all you need to hear.
That's correct. All right, Chris, you want to wrap this up?
Yeah, let's do it.
All right. So before we get out of here, I'm going to actually give you honors, and you get to pick another track from We've Come For You All. But before we do that, tell the listeners a little bit more about Rock and Pod Expo.
Okay, Nashville Rock and Pod Expo, Friday, August 9th, Saturday, August 10th. Friday will be the pre-party. All of this happening at the Nashville Airport Marriott. Pre-party with the Rock and Roll Residency. It's going to be a great, awesome show. Saturday, the Rock and Pod Expo with Michael Sweet from Stryper, Brian Forsyth from Kix, Jason Bieler from Saigon Kick, Jack from Exodus, Erie Vaughn from Danzig. And best place to go to rockandpod.com, get your tickets. Also, you can book a discounted hotel room there and just stay on site all weekend. Drink all you want. Don't worry about driving, and we'll take care of you. And that's basically the broad strokes. And if you can't make it to Nashville and you want to help donate to the cause, go to rockandpod.com. We'll go to the ticketing link, and there will be a donation button there, and you can help us out. That's pretty much it. Looking forward to seeing you and Baco back in Nashville in August. I think we're going to have a good time.
Oh, yeah. Rock and roll party of the year. Looking forward to it. Thanks for organizing such an event. I mean, the fact that it actually has become a reality now in its third year is just, it's kind of mind-blowing. I mean, and again, also thanks for inspiring myself to waste my time doing this in my basement on a weekly basis. Avoiding my family.
Well, dare to dream.
That's right. How many other ones have you spawned, would you say?
I don't know. I've lost count of all my illegitimate bastard children.
As you should.
Oh, man. But no, I mean, you're all legitimate, I promise. You know.
Uh-huh. All right.
I took your moms out to dinner first.
Hey, now. Good steak dinner, I hope.
Yeah, of course. Well, okay. Sizzler, but, you know, it's not something.
Hopefully they had good sneeze guards there.
Yeah. Well, yeah, I've got Rock and Pod money. I don't have that much to go on.
Are you sure it wasn't Shoney's? Rock's not dead.
But it was an inside job by the Bush administration.
Last out on the throne. It's been picked clean to the bone. It's so hot to
figured we'd start with, you know, just kind of talking about, you know, Bush versus Belladonna and
Belladonna.
Belladonna. Joy Belladonna. Belladonna. It's all potato patata. You know what I mean?
Yeah. Lee Roth and Low Roth.
Exactly. And man, I've been hanging around with Baco too much.
Exactly.
I don't know how to pronounce things anymore.
Arr! Hello, mateys. This is Michael Sweet of Stripe R. I'm looking forward to seeing ya at the Rockin' Pod Expo. But first, here's a quick joke. Why were the attendees of Firefest mad when they got a lettuce salad? Because they were promised arugula.
Hey, this is Liberty DeVito.
This is Mike Del Judas.
This is Michael Cavanaugh from Broadway's Moving Out.
This is John Jackson, director of the Billy Joel Archive.
This is Russell Javers.
This is Richie Cannata, and you're listening to Glass Houses, a Billy Joel podcast. It's awesome.
I'm Michael Grosvenor.
And I'm Jack Fernino.
We're lifelong Billy Joel fans who launched a podcast in 2020 celebrating the music we love.
Whether you're looking for the greatest hits or the B-sides and rarities, you'll find it all here. And if you've ever wondered what happens behind the scenes of a concert or recording session, we've got you covered.
Join us as we explore albums, tours, band members, the latest news, and more. You'll also get a unique glimpse into the music industry straight from the musicians and other professionals who help make it all happen.
Tune into Glass Houses, a Billy Joel podcast, at glasshousespod.com or wherever you get your podcasts.
Glass Houses, a Billy Joel podcast, is a proud member of the Pantheon Podcasts Network.